Let's go to Stephen Leahy, IRS guy. He knows everything. He's not an IRS guy. I shouldn't say that. Stephen, I didn't mean to disparage you. You're a tax guy. You know a lot about the IRS.
Exactly. I don't know, John. Can I take it? I better not.
Yeah.
I think I have the answer to your question.
Oh, don't. No, you guests don't get to win. WGNTaxman.com.
I wanted that T-shirt, John.
Yeah, well, I can get you one, Stephen. Don't worry. You get it in. Thanks for joining us today. I appreciate it.
I'm happy to do it. I'm so happy to be on your show. You know, I love the show.
I appreciate you saying that. 312-981-7200 if you have any tax questions or issues. And we're starting to get some texts for them. But let's start with the article you sent me, because when you send me something, I want to talk about it. And this is about an Atlanta tax preparer sentenced to prison?
Yes, and there's a couple of reasons why I like to talk about this. First, whenever someone contacts, you got a friend or a family member says, I got a tax guy. He does my tax. He gets me the biggest refund. You got to use him. And people, you start getting all your friends and family, and you go to this guy, and he gets everybody a huge refund. And usually what he's doing is he's inventing businesses that you don't have.
Whoa.
And he's putting things in your tax return that aren't true. And
he's inventing, like, you own a business that you don't really own, and you're exactly. starting to take deductions on that business that you don't really own, but
exactly.
And they may not catch you, but if everyone's starting to do that, that's no good.
Well, it takes us some years to catch you, right? It goes through this, you know, when you file, you're going to get the money. And that's why people say, hey, the IRS sent me the money. It must be legit. And that's why they start telling their friends and family, you got to go to this guy. It's terrific. The guys, and most people don't really study their tax returns. You know, I like to study tax returns,
right.
But most people don't. Right. So most people aren't looking. And if I pointed out to them, hey, look, the IRS will say to you, hey, what are these Schedule C deductions? First, they don't know what a Schedule C is. And it's like, oh, I don't know. I don't know anything about those. They're like, well, you put those on your tax return, and that's what got you this big refund. And you sign tax returns under penalty of perjury. Right, so if you didn't inspect it, you're still liable for it. You're still responsible for it.
I was just going to ask, because this is an Atlanta tax preparer. He's going to spend more than a year in prison for defrauding the IRS using fake tax returns for clients. This is in DeKalb County. They don't call it DeKalb like we do. They leave out the L. I think I said that right. People in Georgia, let me know if I said that county right. But they say between 2015 and 2018, this guy filed fraudulent tax returns for clients with falsified information connected to IRA, tuition deductions, capital losses, and more. So he was basically inventing information. And then
then
what happens to the filer themselves? Because like you're saying, they signed it. Is it not prison time, but maybe they're going to have to owe the IRS for this fraudulent information?
Well, the answer is you're going to pay back that money.
Yeah.
They're not going to let you keep that money. And I've had clients who were then brought in as witnesses against their tax preparer. The IRS will contact you and say, hey, tell us what happened. And because they go after the tax preparer. So mostly the tax payer not going to be brought up on charges. Because again, most people aren't really intent. They don't intend to defraud. They think that this guy's doing the right job for them.
Right.
But another reason why I wanted to bring this up is that this is why if you're running a business, you should not have your business deductions on your personal tax return, because this is the area that people use to defraud the IRS. And so you're much more likely to get an audit if you, even if it's legit, because they don't know it's legit.
Okay. Right? Then I know people that do this, and I'm going to admit something, Stephen, and you're going to whack me upside the head next time you talk with me. But I have a legit, you know, side business that I do with, you mm-hmm. know, voicing over and stuff like that mm-hmm. and contracted work, and it falls under a company name, et cetera. I know other people that do the same thing. But then when I file my taxes, I just, you know, I enter it all in this separate mm-hmm. section, but it's all part of my personal tax returns. And you're telling me that, well, it may be accurate and the information I'm giving is truthful, that exposes me maybe to something that I haven't thought of?
Exactly. And that's why the LLC is the limited liability companies, and a lot of people will choose these as an entity to form a company because then they could put it on their personal tax return. But it's really a red flag, and I recommend never to put your business expenses on your personal tax return. Much better to, if you have an LLC, you can still do it, what they call a subchapter S, and then start doing a separate tax return for those. I got to tell you, I've had people who were audited, had legitimate businesses, legitimate deductions, and the audit denied them because they said, well, these, you know, these aren't legitimate deductions. And then you're fighting about what is and is not a legitimate deduction. And if they would have been on their own, on a business tax return, there would have been no questions asked.
Do you have to have an LLC to do that, or can you do that as an individual that just happens to have business expenses? Or do you have to have
you have to have an entity, separate entity, right? So an LLC works, or a corporation, and you can do a sub. These are called what they call flow-through companies, right, where the corporation or the business has a separate tax return, and then whatever the profit is, it flows to you as income. So the company really doesn't pay taxes. You, as the owner, pay taxes on the company's profit.
And people should really look into that stuff for business, because not only is it maybe not as much of a red flag for the IRS, but there are actually some really legitimate deductions you can take as a business owner that people miss out on, I think.
I 100% agree with you, John. And it's because, I always tell people, have you ever seen the size of the IRS code? There's something in there that you don't know, right?
Right.
And you can use it if you do, you know. But again, it's much better to have it on a separate tax return, and that way you can use these deductions. And another thing, treat your company like a company, right? It's separate than you. Treat it as a business. Too few people do that. They treat it as a hobby. And if you treat it as a hobby, the IRS will too. And that's a problem, because you won't get a lot of deductions because you treat it as a hobby and not a business.
Right. Because I've even heard from people talking about how, like, if you are self-employed and you have a business, and you can, like, give yourself a pension, and there's tax deductions with that. And people are like, what? And it's even better than an IRA in terms of how much you can save away.
Yes. So this is what we call tax planning, right? There's a difference between tax planning and tax preparation. So a lot of people have a CPA or a tax preparer, and you, at the end of the year, you give them all your information, and they just kind of recompile it and put it on your tax forms and send it in. And they say, well, you know, think about this. Did your CPA ever said, hey, maybe if we did this, we could save you money, or if you could do this, or maybe you should put money in an IRA, or maybe you should do this. This is called tax planning, and that's a different thing than tax preparation. And that's, we help people do that too.
Okay, WGNTaxMan.com. I got a question from the text line. And Stephen, you usually know these off the top of your head, but I know you've been running around today. So I actually looked up the answer for you too, to help you out. But 2022, people are wondering, will you be able to do the simple charitable deduction, which was $600 last year for a married couple, if you take the standard deduction? And I think the answer is yes. It looks like it's actually going up next year.
It is going up next year, you know, but that is something like, I have tax preparers that work for me, and they're really great at all these deductions. I don't always recall these at the top
of my head. That's why I was giving you the benefit of the doubt, because I didn't prepare you for that. It's actually going up to $400 for single filers and $800 for married couples compared to the 2021 amount. Again, that's for people taking the standard deduction, because that was one of the things the Fed was worried about after the Trump tax plan was passed.
Exactly.
And they doubled, essentially, the standard deduction. They were worried that no one would make charitable deductions, because that was a big incentive. So they still want to incentivize it. That's why they still have that in there, right?
It is. And also, you know, every time when they try to eliminate something because they try to make the tax code simpler, everybody complains and they go right back to what it was.
312-981-7200 if you have any questions. I got one for you, and other people do too, because I saw an article about this. I just moved. I was selling some stuff through these online marketplaces, little things of furniture, and I'm so dumb on this, Stephen. Is every single dollar I make, even if I just sold something for like $50, is that taxable income?
The answer is no, but you're going to have a problem in that. And we talked a lot about this, John, with this the 1099K thing that's coming out with these cash apps and PayPal, right? That you may not owe taxes, right? If I buy something for $100 and I sell it for $50, I've lost money.
Oh, true.
I haven't gained any money. So, but how can I prove I bought it for $100?
Right. I don't have those receipts.
And that's where the problem is going to come in.
Right. So, I mean, obviously, I can't imagine they're going to I don't want to say they can't find out like I'm trying to hide something. The odds of them asking me about this are pretty slim. But I guess if there's an audit, then they're going to look at everything.
Exactly. And, of course, now what will happen is if you're using a Cash App or something, you'll get a 1099-K, and you'll have to explain it.
I got another dumb question here for you. Actually, why don't we save this next dumb question for after the news? We're getting some phone calls, too. 312-981-7200. If you got questions for Stephen Leahy, you can reach him at WGNTaxman.com, and there you can find his phone number as well. Stephen, where do you want people to call you at?
312-664-6649. Happy to call you. Remember, Marianne called me last time I was on your show, and we're answering her questions.
Oh, good. I'm glad she reached out because she had a couple of them. Okay, Stephen, putting you on hold. We'll get to my dumb questions and your smart questions, listeners, after the news here on WGN. Right now, it's Let's Get Legal, powered by the Illinois State Bar Association. John Hansen here, Stephen Leahy there on the phone line. Stephen, got a couple questions for you. Ready to go?
Let's go.
708 wants to know, regarding slot machine casino gambling losses, what records am I required to maintain? Does the IRS accept casinos' records? And how do your clients fare in audits and appeals for gambling losses?
Well, these are all good questions in that here in Illinois, they do accept the records of your, if you're a regular gambler, you probably have a club. And they keep records of all that. And
like a club card?
Exactly. And so here's what I want people to know. And I was kind of surprised about this when I learned about, I had a client that went to casinos a lot. In Illinois, you can't deduct your losses from your winnings in order to determine how much your taxes are.
Oh, you mean like if you win a big amount, but you lost XYZ, you would subtract the total and go, well, this is how much I actually made. You can't do that?
That's right.
For Illinois income tax or for federal?
For Illinois state income tax, right?
Interesting.
So it's 5%. I had someone, let's say they did $200,000 in they won, but they lost $250,000. You pay taxes on the
$200,000. Whoa. So,
yes.
In the state of Illinois. Wow.
Yes. Different than the federal government. In the federal government,
that
I get to deduct my losses.
That makes no sense.
That's what I thought. Usually when it doesn't make any sense, it's like, wait a minute, this isn't right. And then, of course, it turns out it is right. That's what happens here in Illinois.
Okay,
and
but
so you have
to, yeah, so to the question about audits and appeals, I assume it all comes down to what it always does, right? The record keeping.
Exactly. It's always about record keeping. And they are very picky about gambling. I know a lot of times people want to then say, well, I'm a professional gambler. Very difficult to be a professional gambler for the IRS, right? They have high scrutiny on this because they don't want you to deduct all that stuff.
Right. Okay. Well, yeah, keep your records and do your club cards. And I imagine it's maybe even more difficult at slot machines and bars, right? They're everywhere now. You don't get a bar card for some of those things.
How can you prove it? It goes down the proof. You know, so you've made a lot of money. You hit with the and anybody who plays a lot, right? They win sometimes.
Yeah.
And so if you're only going to pay taxes when you win, and you can't deduct what you lose, and just be honest, right? Most people lose in the long run,
right?
You know, and so you're not really making money. But if you don't keep good records, and as you said, if I'm in a tavern and I'm playing this, I mean, what kind of records am I going to take? Right? I lost $500. How are you going to prove that?
So
very difficult.
I got a dumb question then. I got a couple of them. So I made like $110 at a bar in Wisconsin a couple weeks ago. Is that taxable income, that $110?
Absolutely.
And then that leads to my next question. Let's say someone gets a gig or something and they work for $200 or $300. It doesn't reach the threshold that's $600 where you're going to get a 1099, but it doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. Any income you get is taxable.
Exactly. The 16th Amendment. All income from whatever source derived is taxable income. And so just because you don't get a 1099-K or a 1099 or what they call the W-2G, whatever it is, just because you don't get one doesn't mean you don't pay taxes on that. And just if you're a babysitter and you're making money, I used to take them on my Cash App, but now I won't because they're going to send me a 1099-K, doesn't mean I don't have to pay taxes on it.
Yeah. I think the more I talk with you on this show, the more likely I'm about to get audited. I promise I'm paying it all. Ignore my dumb questions. These are just hypotheticals, IRS.
I always tell my clients to talk to me in hypotheticals. Right. Never tell me anything.
And a reminder to the IRS, this is John Williams here on WGN Radio on Saturday afternoon. Or John Landecker. One of the other Johns is talking right now. Let's go to Bill. Bill, you're on WGN. How you doing, Bill?
Good. See, my question is, I owned a condo in Wisconsin. My sister lived there. She passed on.
I'm sorry to hear that.
So I sold the condo this year, and I want to gift the money to her daughter.
Mm-hmm.
So the question is, how do I report this to the IRS?
Interesting, because you want to do it the right way. What are you thinking, Stephen?
Well, again, you're going to have a capital gain probably, and I don't know, you know, what you bought it for, what it sold for, whatever. You know, you might have a capital gain if you got the property after she passed, and maybe there's not a capital gain because you take whenever someone passes and leaves you property, you take it at the market value at the time of their death. That's another thing that they're trying to change, and I think this is a very important one.
Let me make sure I understand that. So it's not the value of when you sell it; it's the value of when the passing occurred.
Correct. And so, you know, I have a mother, and she has this property. She's owned it for 50 years, right? She paid $25,000 for it. Now it's worth, you know, $300,000. If she sold it while she's alive, she's going to pay, you know, that's capital gains from the $25,000. But if she passes it, then gives me the property, now I take it at a value of $325,000. So I don't pay any. If I sold it right away, I wouldn't pay any capital gains tax on that. Now go back to the gift. You can gift money, and it's actually the gift that you can give to people is fairly large. You know, I think it's $13,000 per person, but if it's a family member, it could go up. I think it's $1 million or something. I don't know the number off the top of my head, but it's very high. And the person that you give the money to, it's not their tax obligation. The one who gifts it, it's your tax obligation.
Okay, so if they get it, do they have to report that as a gift? But it may not. It may be sheltered from income tax.
Correct. Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
So should Bill
gets the gift doesn't pay taxes on it?
Should Bill write a letter and get it notarized or something? Like, what's the best way to record keep that?
Well, he could. Well, as we always talk about records, right? Keep all your records. But you could gift money. If I have money in a bank account and I give it to my niece or I gave it to my son, I could gift money to them and then report it, yes.
Okay. Bill, I hope that answered the question for you.
Okay, so just there's forms evidently that I'll have to fill out and send them into the IRS.
Well, I don't think you have to send it in, the gift receiver.
No. Yes, he does.
Okay, I'll stop.
The gift giver has to file.
Okay.
The gift receiver, they don't have any tax obligation. But it's a gift tax.
Okay.
The gift tax.
Okay.
It's a gift tax form then. Okay.
That's correct.
Yeah, thanks. Very helpful. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Well, you're assuming Stephen got it right, so... No, I'm just kidding. Thanks, Bill. Thanks for listening.
There are some things that I get right.
No, you're great. WGNTaxman.com. We can go ahead and put Bill on hold there, Iridian. By the way, someone texted this in, and I do say this a lot. I often preface questions by saying this is a dumb question. And I know I've been taught by my teachers and everyone in the world that there's no dumb questions. Of course there's not dumb questions. I guess I just feel dumb saying them. And I say that sometimes to try and prompt other people that, hey, this is a space for any question out there. So don't feel like any question's dumb.
Mm-hmm.
But this person in all caps said, please don't say that. I probably will because it's in my vernacular, but I don't mean it like that. I just mean it like I feel a little silly asking this.
Sometimes it sounds like an obvious question, but obvious questions, most people, you know, they don't know.
Right. You know? I'm just so used to saying I got a dumb question. It's just the phrase I use. All right. I'm going to put you on hold, Stephen. Can you take a little longer for us?
Yeah, sure.
All right. Let's put Stephen on hold. We're going to take a break. If you got any other tax questions, 312-981-7200. We're going to do our best to answer all of them. Got a couple other questions for Stephen, too, after this. Let's get legal powered by the Illinois State Bar Association. Stephen Leahy on the line, WGNTaxman.com. 312-664-6649 is how you reach him. Getting some comments, and there's always confusion about this gift tax limits. So, Stephen, I know that you would recommend people calling you, and you can follow up with your people. But people are like, oh, no, after $15,000 or $16,000, you have to pay tax. No, from everything that I read and what I've talked to from yourself and other people, that's when you have to start dealing with the IRS. But there is a lifetime exemption, and it's pretty high of what you can gift. So even if you gave someone $200,000 to a family member, that's over the gift exclusion. You'll have to report it to the IRS, but you won't immediately have to pay tax on that gift. Instead, the IRS deducts that $200,000 from your lifetime gift tax exemption. So
exactly, and what people do is then you give it to a married couple. They get one, and the other one gets the other. So they both have a lifetime exemption.
Right. 630 wanted to know, I installed a new water heater. It qualifies for a $300 tax credit. What is that? Is that a TurboTax question? How do I make sure that I get it? That's interesting because we have many things out there, whether it's solar panels or EVs, where you get like tax rebates or you get rebates on things.
Yeah.
How does one go about getting those? Is it just filling out the right form?
Yeah, exactly. It's in your tax returns, right? There's a place in there to claim these credits. This new Inflation Reduction Act had a lot of this, you know, for solar panels and all of the electric cars. It's in your file. I mean, there is a form for it in your, the 1040 is like one page now or two pages. And then there's all the schedule A, I think it goes through H. Something like that now. And so there's a schedule that you schedule these, credits.
Okay. 312-981-7200. Hey, does the IRS text anyone, Stephen?
The answer is no. And when someone tells you that they are, I used to tell people they never called, but sometimes they'll call now, but they never text you. And I've heard that there's this scam going out there. There's always IRS scams.
Oh,
why?
Yeah.
Because people are afraid of the IRS.
Yes.
So if I'm a scammer, I'm going to use the person that everybody's afraid of. I don't want any problems. I'm just going to pay them, right?
Right, right. That's why some people use Stephen A. Leahy as a scam. Hey, I'm Stephen calling you. And everyone's scared of everyone's scared of that fedora, so no one wants to mess with it. There's an interesting... So, yes, if you ever get texted, it's not the IRS. Do not fall for it. Don't respond. I always just... When I get, like, a weird text that has a link to click on, number one, never click on it. And number two... what you can do is you can block that contact from your phone, and they use a bunch of different numbers, so I do it repeatedly, but sometimes I get it from the same number, or someone keeps calling and it's a scam. Just block the number on your phone, and then they'll stop bothering you, or they just won't ever get through. IRS still is looking at crypto, even though crypto's really crashed this year. It's still something the IRS is trying to get their hands around, isn't it?
It is, and, you know, it's this, we talked a lot on the show, they used to do what they call the 1099-K, and the 1099, and I have a lot of clients who had this problem, because they would get a 1099-K, and a 1099-K simply reports all the money that goes through an account, right, and now they're changing to a 1099-B, which is a more like a broker, so it'll show you what your profit was. It may or may not be accurate, though, but it does make it a little bit better, and so that's like we just were talking about these cash apps. Those are going to be 1099-K. So say I did some sales like you're doing, John. You sell some stuff over the over eBay or whatever.
Right.
You get money through the cash app. Maybe you return some, right?
Mm-hmm.
But that's not going to be on the 1099-K. So if I say I sold something for $600, somebody returned it to me, I gave them the $600 back, and then I sold it again for $600. I'll get a 1099-K for $1,200.
Ah, I see. Okay.
But then I'll have to show the IRS, well, yes, I got this $600, but that's not taxable because I paid $700 for that. And this one I'm saying is going to be much more difficult this next year for people just because of the reporting, these what they call information returns. And this is the way the IRS is going, right? They're trying to get more and more information returns, so they don't have to rely on you to report it. Somebody else is reporting it on you, and then they'll ask you to explain it.
Here's a good question from the 630. Does the IRS audit people making under 100K? And this is where you might say they didn't before, but now they have a lot more in their ability
to
do this.
They always have.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, because
it's part of it, right? That's
right.
Part, you know, they do pick people by random, so there's nothing you can do that put yourself 100% from never being audited, because they can audit anybody for, you know, again, they do it randomly. But again, we've already talked about some ideas to keep things off so you don't get audited. Don't put those red flags on your return, so then your chances reduce very much. But yes, they were, and really, I think the numbers are higher for people making less than $70,000. Why? Earned income tax credits. This is when you don't pay any taxes and the government gives you money.
Right.
So there's a lot of fraud in that area.
Rudy, let's lock Stephen on in because I want to ask Gene or let Gene get on the line here. Gene, you got a question for Stephen?
Yes. My husband passed away recently.
Oh, I'm sorry, Gene.
Thank you. I have to contact the IRS because I understand that I can collect his Social Security, but I have to give mine up, and I don't know what to do.
Stephen, any thoughts on that?
You know, that she's right about that you can collect the higher of the two and how that works. I'd be happy to talk to you. It's not my area of the law, okay, but I know a little bit about it.
Gene, write down this phone number, 312-6...
Wait a minute.
Okay.
Wait a minute.
You're fine.
312-664...
664-6649.
Okay.
And Stephen and his team will make sure they help you out with those questions specifically.
And if I can't help you, I'll tell you who can.
Okay.
Oh, you're wonderful. Thank you.
He is wonderful. Thank you, Gene. And sorry again about the passing of your husband. All right, Stephen Leahy, we're out of time, my friend. We got a short show today. We'll have to do it again soon, okay?
Well, get the answer of the day answered.
Oh, yes, I will. That's why I have to let you go, because I have to take a commercial break, and I got to get this answer, because everyone wants to know, what were there over 200 of in the U.S.? There are over 200 in the U.S., with at least one in each state except Alaska, and Stephen texted me the right answer. Yes, Stephen, you got it right. Will some listener get it right? Call right now to find out. Thanks, Stephen.
Thanks, John.
Take care.
Bye-bye.